The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast. It's a weekend podcast. We're recording this a bit late. Markets close on a Friday evening. It's supposed to start at 5:15. It's because Pete was late. We haven't started in time.
What?
Sorry, Steve, I meant. Because yeah. Steve was late to him starting time. Stephen, come on.
How do you mean I'm late? Why am I late?
Oh, sorry, it's me. I tell you what it was. I was building a new swing and climbing thing in the garden. It made a big, bits of wood, round bits
just
of
just for you and the wife.
It's just me and the wife, We haven't told the kids about it. We're just going to put a cover over it when they're around. But it's halfway up, but my hands are covered in grease there. So it's drilling. I'm not good at DIY. There's drilling involved. I didn't want that. I just want to chuck it up there in the garden. There's drilling involved. There's screwing involved by me and the wife. That's why it delayed a bit, because we've been doing that as well. So I tell you what, I just want to get off my chest, off my mind. England in the rugby are not doing very well, Pete, are they?
Right, so that's the first subject.
That's
is it.
Yeah. Have you seen that, Steve? We're now at second position in the points table.
I think most people listening to this are tuning in because they want to talk about stocks and shares. So I think we should focus on the subject.
Okay, we will. Well,
in all fairness, most people listening are probably from England.
England. How many syllables is that, Steve? England. The funny thing was, Pete, I took a screenshot of the points board after your game on the weekend.
It's
a table. After Wales thrash Italy and you're hammering. And I said that, and you came back with you're very good for a small country. And oddly, revealed this week, Eddie Jones slagging off the Irish and the Welsh, and all he said was about Wales, Wales, it's only got 3 million people. 3 million! That's all I got, 3 million people! I thought, what? Is that the best you can do? Because to me, that's quite impressive. You've got a small pool to get, to choose from, and you're outperforming, that's quite good.
So that's my point, isn't it?
That's the same as Eddie Jones. Is that the best you can do? Size, yeah. You can see
that. No. I said that's impressive that Wales are achieving that. It's very good.
Yeah, in a bit of a sarcastic way, you were saying it.
No.
So, yes. Yes.
No.
Yes. No. I mean, on Newsnight or that kind of argument or question time. No, yes. No, yes. Yes, no. No.
No.
Yes.
No.
I'd love to laugh for half an hour. No. Yes.
No. Anyway,
what was your chat about? So this weekend, of course, it's the final. It's England in Twickenham. Of course, Six Nations. Ireland playing England on St. Patrick's Day, pretty much. St. Patrick's Weekend. They're on stunning form, aren't they? In the horse as well. In the Cheltenham Cup, there's a lot of Irish races doing well. And also, obviously, in rugby. So there we go. But, yes. Do you know what? I sort of, in the comments this week, before we get to stock and shares, I sort of agreed with Jeremy Corbyn for the first time ever in my life.
Yeah, so did I. Is this about Russia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree as well.
Because someone pointed out, do us a favour, there's a BBC called the New Tsar, Putin. Watch it, phenomenal. He's probably the richest guy in the world. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's a corrupt nation. They pretend to have democratic elections, but you watch it. Whenever someone stands against him, right, there's one guy trying to... Oh, in fact, it was Garry Kasparov, the chess player, when they stand against him, and they went on a tour in the country. Every hall they booked around the country, there was a problem with electricity or the plumbing wasn't working, they couldn't have the hall. It's like really odd. And one guy, he got shot. They pretend to have this democratic election. But listen, when you're in, a democratically elected country and you become a leader, like president or prime minister, you do earn more money afterwards, and generally, the wage is quite good, And afterwards, you do often in speaking, of course, you earn a lot of money, you sell books and stuff. But you do not become worth several billion. He's worth like 220 billion. because he's basically took shares in all the he said the oil and gas companies, obviously that's a massive sector in Russia. Said unless I have part of your company, you're going through. That's it. And so he basically oligarchs. But yeah, but I just think maybe he's so arrogant that he didn't care that he killed someone on British soil and didn't really care about the repercussions. But part of me thinks, no, even if you are an arrogant egomaniac, which I obviously he is, surely you try and make some kind of cover-up somehow. You wouldn't make it obvious,
yeah,
would you?
That's my point, is that it's so obvious, like, that, you know, it's too blatant. Whereas if they were definitely involved, from like if it was state-sponsored, you'd think they would actually do something so it wouldn't be... the link wouldn't be so direct to the nerve agent that comes from Russia. I don't know. I mean, I just sort of think it's a bit too obvious. But we're not told everything, are we? So we don't know. There's probably some very, very good intelligence that it is them. And, you know, that's we're not given the details, are we?
Well, talking about intelligence, let's ask Steve. Steve, what's your opinion on it, Steve?
Well, I can only go what's been gone on the news. And the intelligence we shared with us, the USA, maybe not directly Trump, but, they're not going to accuse him because it's quite a bigger accusation to make if... they're not 100% certain, are they?
I thought Theresa May misjudged it completely there. If you're basically, you've got someone who believes he's the most powerful man in the world, you know, his country, he's one of the richest in the world, and you're saying to him, by 12 o'clock tonight, I want to know what did it. You honestly think he's going to, you know, cow down to her and say, we need to find out before Theresa comes over and dusts me up. You know,
it's a bit like, you know, giving an ultimatum to the school bully, isn't it? Give me my dinner money back by midnight, or I'll ask you again nicely tomorrow.
I'll cry. She's trying to make a stand and being tough. But I sort of agree with Jeremy Corbyn. You know, isn't there a UN? I missed it. I tried to look it up, but there's a formal resolution process for this kind of thing to happen. And you're supposed to give a certain amount of days, aren't you? And they did. And the UK didn't do that. They said 12 o'clock tonight. We want it. Putin, we want it. We want to know. We want to know what's going on, son. You've been poisoning our boys. And also what I don't understand is state sponsoring. How does that work then? Do you just go up to them and say, oh, excuse me, Vlad, Mr. Putin, any chance I can get sponsored for killing someone in Britain? Oh, yes, you get a T-shirt and everything. And you just go around,
It's like a Just Giving page, but it's slightly different. And, you just set it up and it just sponsors you and off you go.
Vlad sponsors you. He's the first one on there. Saying, I'm giving you 50 grand to go and kill a traitor in England, in Salisbury.
Leaves a little message.
Yeah, no, doesn't message the bottom. Share it on Twitter. And he says, I better delete that. I don't want to share it. No, otherwise, the British will realise it's me. I'll delete that, man. I didn't want to share it. What did I share it for? There we go. I'd love to have another world leader on Twitter. You know, like Trump is.
Yes.
And a really bitchy argument on Twitter, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
there's the Canadian one,
John Turode, yeah, he's a very good cook as well. And I don't see how he fits that in with MasterChef. Do you? He does do it, though. He manages to do all his MasterChefs, and he's there. Anyway, on the stocks, do you know what's impressive?
Steve's portfolio.
Apart from that, Steve, in a pair of Speedos, that's impressive. Check it out, Steve's portfolio there in his trunks. Anyway, check out my portfolio, ladies. What I was going to say is, this week, Asia Met Resources, the guys, I did say, this. A lot of Asian companies, this is the way you want to do it. And like I said, my acronym that I have, CCASSH, for research company. And one of those is shareholders, of course. The first S, how tightly the shares held. Do the board have a lot of skin in the game? So they raised at pretty much 11 pence. And at the time, the share price was around about 11 pence. Wasn't a lot off that. So not a big discount. And of that, Tony the Manini, I'm taking some more skin in the game. He knows he's on a good thing there, right? But not only that, he backs up every time they do a fundraise. He does put his hand in his pocket, get out the cash, the mushwar. How many shares did he buy? Let me have to think. I'm trying to find it here. Tony.
I saw your tweet saying, like, if every company on AIM followed that example, it would be a much simpler world, wouldn't it? Or, it would be a lot better. It does make you wonder why there are so many companies that don't follow quite that. transparent level of transparency and commitment to their cause.
Probably because they don't believe in what they're doing.
Correct.
Well, that's it. Yeah. So you've got a question. Whenever you've got a company that's saying, you know, we've got a world-class project,
exactly.
And they don't, and yet there's a fundraise and they don't take part. Why not? Why not? Why? There's people, you know, don't know less about it than you. So that would suggest that if you don't believe it's world-class, then, you know, because they don't know, we all believe what you're saying. So put your money where your mouth is. That's the whole thing, isn't it?
The funny thing is that, like, skin in the game is a big thing that we've talked about, and I do really value that. And some of our big successes of the last year, AsiaMet, obviously. Vesarion, another example. Yeah. Where
BT. Oh, no, hang on. No.
Not so much. The head honcho is, you know, he's got involved, but for one reason. And Upland is the same as well, isn't it?
Yeah, big, exactly. Upland chunk. Resources.
I'm trying to find your head honcho gets involved.
Exactly, and I can't see shares.
I'm assuming you haven't told your dad about the AsiaMet share price.
Oh no, he's told, didn't he? I don't know what he's doing.
Is he still monitoring it? Is it still on his watch list? He's like, oh, whoops, might have sold out too early there.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, my father says, when it's, you know, typical, when it's rising, he still hasn't got the idea. When it's rising, he still wants to buy more. Should buy more?
Yeah.
On a peak, so no. So Tony Minnini. 3.1 million he subscribed for at 11 pence. What's the maths, Steve? 3.1 million at 11 pence. What's the maths on that?
No, I don't know. Pete.
It's not Pete. It's got to be a number, Steve. It's not going to be a name.
Yeah. I'm not even going to engage my brain to work out what Pete. I know it's an easy one.
Well, it's just under 300 grand, isn't it?
What is a tenth? £350,000. That's how much he's put in. That's how much Tony thinks of this. And this is not the first time he said this. So he subscribed to me. So how much do you own? He now has 31 million. So he's got over 3 million in the price there. So in fact, at today's rate, that's like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I did that classic other way round. If it was 9, it would be just below, three. It was 11p, so just over 300 grand. Yes.
At what, 12 pence? Tony got like 3.7 million bucks, pounds, that is, in AsiaMet, you know? That's how much he believes in it, 3.7 million.
That's, what? No, 300,000.
He's got 31 million.
Oh, now in total?
Yeah, he got 3.4% of the company. So in that's
total,
that, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think Vesarion, it was of Neil Ricketts, of course, on the podcast this week. I talked about state-sponsored stuff as Team Sky. Of course, he's... Because are you into cycling, Pete, aren't you? You like your cycling.
Yes.
I know, I've seen them a lot, and they're quite dominant, aren't they? Are they one of the best teams, Team Sky?
Well, yeah, they have been. But there are a few question marks now, perhaps.
Do you know what, though? That's good. That's happened with all cycling forever, hasn't it? Do you remember? Lance Armstrong was my hero. I read his book, and I thought, this guy's phenomenal. Mm. Absolutely phenomenal. Turns out the reason he was phenomenal is because he's taking, but I mean,
but people into cycling at that time were kind of cynical of that, so we didn't come as a surprise when he was eventually found out.
Yeah, if you don't know about Lance Armstrong, right?
Basically,
Lance Armstrong won like the Tour de France 6 times, had cancer. They said he had brain cancer. They said there's no chance you're surviving this at all. And then he came back from that and won again. What? So you know, that's phenomenal. How did he do that? Yeah. So 7 times the Tour de France he won, didn't he? I think it's a world record in that
right.
now.
And he's now been stripped of all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, he's just naked down there, naked. But
Sky sail.
Anyway, let's get off that. We don't want to focus on that.
Vesarion.
So what I'm saying is Vesarion. So they're a market cap of 123 million. Neil, of course, the biggest shareholder again, is is there a coincidence here that the guys at the centre having a big chunk? And that's why I think, do you know what? I have been a bit, I try and find almost a new investment idea almost every week, every day, you know? And sometimes, if they don't tick the boxes that's in my acronym there, of course, I'll miss out on opportunities, but I think you could afford to go bigger and, you know, expose yourself more portfolio-wise. Like I always say, try and keep within, you know, no more than 10% of your entire portfolio worth, put it into one company. You should never go over that. But I think when you've got everything that ticks the box, capitalization, it's quite a small cap company, chart, it's not spiking on the chart, very good assets, you know, do they have cash? They have cash to take them through the next milestone. Shareholders, you know, tightly held, so you're talking about sort of almost a free float. And don't worry about numbers of shares. A couple of people say, oh, there's a lot of... people won't invest in a certain amount of shares because too many shares in issue, like there are 5 billion shares. Doesn't matter. I thought that when I first started. What's important is the free float. That's what's important. That means the amount of shares outstanding there, not basically held by long-term holders. That, and I did an analogy. I tried to make an analogy recently, and I posted it in Twitter. And I said, imagine it like a tug-of-war team, right? So you've got the rope in the middle. That's pretty much like the sort of share price, right? And then at one end, the one tug-of-war team, you've got long-term holders, directors, all that stuff. So let's say the long-term holders have about, 40% of the stock. And so 60% is out there free float. It's quite a, you know, what I'm saying is there's not many people on the other side of the... on the other side of the rope there. I don't know how I'm going to work. I don't know how I did this in the analogy, but it seems to sound better than this. At the moment, this phone is very baggy. But the rope is quite baggy. So then, all of a sudden, so that the long-term shareholders, you know, increase, they add another 10%. So they get 5%. And then all of a sudden, the 10% is taken up by somebody else. Somebody else buys another 10% on the other side. So you've got the rope is tightening. You know, the rope is tightening. And then the one person on the one side is moving a bit. So that's moving the share price. This wasn't an analogy I said. It was a bit different than this. I don't know how I did it. What I'm saying is, once that rope becomes more taut, the more the share price moves because there's less about. You know, people are demanding. It's like any marketplace, isn't it? You know, when you're demanding something that's not there, it's the supply and demand. If it's not there, they push the price up. And that will curve the supply a bit. And also people start selling. But that's what I'm saying. So don't worry about the amount of shares in issue.
They don't actually have a tug of war.
That's not what happens on the stock exchange, no, between the market.
That's not just loads of ropes in the stock exchange.
That would make it more fun, wouldn't it?
I see. So you're just using this as an example and you're saying, this is what happens. I see. Yes, that's very good.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is, whenever you go, I mean, any website, go to the investment part, investor relations part. Let me just go to, let me just look at the Vesarion for now, for example. Vesarion, I'll put, and all you type in, say, searching Vesarion investor relations on any website, and just type that into Google, investor relations, and it'll say there, and it often has like, shareholder information, AIM Rule 26. You'll find it under there, and what it was time is they've got to have this AIM Rule 26 where they give a description of the business after certain, you know, and all that, shareholders. So here we go, look at this. So Neil Ricketts here, 10.5% of the company, has 15 million shares, 5.6. And you've got Hargreaves Lansdown, Mighton Asset Management, Herald Investment. So I'm looking there, how many there? So 15 and 10, there's a lot there, tucked up there, hidden away in long-term holders' hands. So I'm saying, it's not a lot of free float there at all, you know? That's what you should look at. Not the amount of shares outstanding. Doesn't matter. No.
The thing is, with these companies like this, where they are, it's a good story, whether it's got lots of, you know, it's tightly held by some really key people, skin in the game in the board of directors, all the rest of it. And the thing is, it comes down to then de-risking. I know recently we've had a couple where, you know, you sort of think, I don't really want to de-risk. I don't really want to sell. You know, I bought at a good price and it's on the rise and I really believe in the long term. And the sensible thing is if you double, then you sell half and all that. But then some of these companies, you're like, I don't really want to do that because I do believe
Asia Met. I massively de-risked from it. And I still got a nice profit in it, but if I'd have kept in what I'd originally had in it,
But listen. Asian Mets don't come around every day. You know, we didn't know there's going to be a 10-12 bagger. We didn't know that when we started off. So it's always good to have that policy of de-risking anyway, and then let it go to free ride. Because, you know, the day you don't do that, the day you don't de-risk is until you have a tanker. And I was a double on that.
I haven't de-risked Upland Resources because, again, that's a similar thing that I just think is a very...
Exactly, that's another example.
I should be, perhaps, de-risking.
Well, let's put this through the filter of cash, right? Capitalization is around about, 12 million, not a lot. So, and the assets they have, they're going to be, obviously, the one we know of is Wick, and they're about 100 million barrels of oil net to them if it's successful. So you do the math on that, times, you know, even you get 10 bucks a barrel off that. It's good upside there. Our chart, again, look at the chart. It is looking a bit spiky, you know? So... Yeah. This is not where you'd buy now. Let it settle down a little bit, and
then you talk about
Upland
now.
Yeah, Upland Resources. Let it settle down a little bit, So the chart is a little spiky. I can see it coming down to support level there, 2.25 maybe, 2.26. It's around there maybe, so maybe there. So that's one box it hasn't ticked. Assets, yes, there's going to be some more landing. We know that from the Far East and North Africa. And they've got cash there as well. Shareholders, we know it's very tightly held by some big fellas. And the board have some significant milestone. Yes, we've got WIC coming up. They've got enough money to get to that. Is it priced in? It's a little bit priced in. And I think the WIC is priced in, I think, sort of, anyway. But if they have success, then obviously they'll take off. But they haven't priced fully in, I think, the other assets, because we don't know much about them. So we've got North Africa and Sarawak. And it's flown a little bit on hype and hope. But I think, you know, if these are big high-impact assets, and I don't think the Toon Group would get involved, and Norza, the chairman, would get involved to the tune they have, to, you know, to the size they have, if these assets weren't big, because they're big businessmen. They're not going to be in it for they put £1 million in, and they've got a convertible loan note there. They're not going to be in it for a couple of grand, you know, 50 grand, 100 grand. They're in it for big money, so I'm assuming it's a big investment coming in. And obviously, head honchos, who's the management, what's their track record.
And they bought it at, what, about 1.8, wasn't it, or something? Or it was below 2p, I think they were buying it. I can't remember. It was around that. But anyway, and, you know, they're not looking for 10%, are they? Are they? Maybe 20%. They're looking for a much multiple gain, aren't they, of their, how many millions they've put in. But you'd think it has a long-term sort of potentially good story. That sounds like a very, very bad ramp. But, yeah, no, it's... It's a very subtle ramp.
Yeah.
No, but I sort of believe in it. So I'm looking at it and going, I don't want to de-risk. If it comes back down to 2.2, so I'll buy some more, really, to be honest, and average up.
Yes. I average up on Upland. I held a big chunk of those at like under a penny when they first started. Where were they buy? No, not under a penny. Yeah. I think it was about 1.2.
No, it was about 1.2, wasn't it?
I remember buying and the share price was moving. And because there was very little free... So you couldn't buy a lot. And literally, if you bought something, it would tick up a little bit because it was so tightly held. That's the kind of thing you want. You know, it's so tightly held that you buy a little bit, it moves the price. And you think, wow. Yeah. You know it's tightly held then. But I averaged up. And so I think my 100%, I'm just off. Are you 100% Pete on those, are you?
I am, correct.
I'm about sort of, I think about 80%, I think, on those. Average up, but I'm happy to see this journey. But again, now it inspires confidence in me looking at Asia Met, you know. And I know it's a different asset, it's a different company, of course. But I just think these guys, you know, believe in the project, and that's why they've got so much money and sort of skin in the game. So if they can believe
I can. I'm just looking at it. So it was 100% the other day. It has now come back. I'm just below 90%. So, like. It's dropping down. You should de-risk, but no, I think I'm happy to let it drop a bit. And like I say, I'm thinking I might average up in due course anyway. So I'm not, I don't know, not that bothered, because I just think it's a good, hopefully a good investment.
Steve, you're 100% on i3e, aren't you?
No, not at all. No, I've only got a little bit in.
What do you mean? What are you talking about? What is he talking about?
Oh, sorry, sorry.
What is he talking about?
No, sorry.
Not at all. I've got
100% of your portfolio.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Is that what you thought? I've got everything in it. I
thought you meant 100% of your 10%.
100% of your 10%?
Yeah. So all of my 10%.
So have you got 100% of your 10%? No.
Yeah.
I'm saying, has your investment increased by 100%?
Oh, right. No, I'm 90% at the moment.
Oh, but you said the other day on Twitter, you said you were 100%.
I was, but it's gone down.
Yeah.
I was up at 100, then it went down to 75, and I'm at 90 now.
Again, i3e, check out the share register. It's very tightly held. There's not a lot of free float out there, and that's why the share price is quite high, you see. I mean, obviously, that makes sense, because what is the share price here? Because it's 80 pence, you know, but it's like a market cap of, let me look, 20 million. So there's only about... How many shares an issue there? No, it's 27 million market cap, so it doesn't matter. I can't see it. I think, you know, buy-in moves this. Any kind of buy-in in volume really moves it, because there's very little free float. That's the thing you want to look at, you know? Free float, try and tie it up and see how much to tie it up by. Yeah. Oh, by the way, someone did say, in fact, I've got to say, apologise to Nigel last week. I had Nigel ask me a question, For the podcast, and then I went and started talking on Nigel, and I was going to say that Nigel's done well in one of the companies we mentioned. I think it was Asia Met, actually, done very well in that. But he was talking about sometimes, you know, when you want to sell a stock and you've done exceptionally well in it, and it's a small cap. And he says, the thing is, sometimes you can sell and then move the price downwards, and you don't want that, you know, you don't, or you can't sell, or you just can't sell. You can't sell half or whatever. There's no offers or. For you, you can't sell it. So I said, what happens there? What do you do? You know, how do you scale out thing? And I've had that. A couple of companies that are very illiquid and they're very small. If you try and sell a chunk of shares, sometimes you can't do it. You know, and sometimes you just can't do it. And so the only way you can do it is when the news comes out and there's good volume. You've got to go in the other way, the tide. You know, you basically you got to ride the wave, whatever analogy you want to use. But when there's, you know, like the old analogy, when people are buying, you've got to be selling. You know, you got to sell into it. So, but a good thing to look at always, this is why I always buy even amount of shares. And normally, it's not just that even because I'm a bit anal and I love to see a round figure on my account. It's normally, I do always do look on the londonstockexchange.com. Just type in the ticker there. For example, let's have a look at Asia Met there. And look at exchange market size. Now, it doesn't matter a lot if you're in small trades or whatever. But if you are on a small cap stock, there's not a lot of volume there, you should always look out what's called the EMS, you know, exchange market size. And that's what, the, you know, market makers will trade in certain chunks of shares, amounts of shares, you know, on different, and there's different sizes for different companies. Like Asia Met, for example, their exchange market size is 50,000. So how much is that? 50,000 times 12 pounds, you do the math, it is about £6,000. So it's fine. So anything over that, and you may struggle a bit. So you may, in a non-liquid day, if it's no one's buying and selling, you may struggle if it's over that amount, you know? So if you keep that amount, I mean, Asia Met isn't it's quite a liquid company, but I mean, other companies always check out the exchange market size, and sometimes, if it's a very liquid company, that, you know, EMS can be quite small, you know? So you if you're trying to sell, say, a couple of grand, and the exchange market size was 1,000, you may find it hard. But if it's a good day, and like, you know, they've released news, and you've done really well in the stock anyway, that's the time you should be de-risking. Like I said, sell when it's going up, buy when it's going down, if you've done your research on companies, and you know what you're doing, you know? So that's always worth looking at. Exchange market size, that's a term.
Okay, interesting.
Steve, did you learn anything there?
Nope.
Good. Steve tries to keep his learning down in a day. I think he's probably learned his one thing today, and and he doesn't want to melt his brain.
My brain's at capacity. Yeah,
it's at capacity. Yeah.
His comic timing is just acceptable.
He learned that. What he learned today was it's not bin day, and then he can't take anything else on board.
Yeah, that's it.
He's put his bins out. Where's the bin man there? Someone next door says it's not bin day on Friday, Steve. Oh, okay, cool. She puts them out every day, and then bin man.
You sat there, Steve, going, right, don't listen to this. I don't want to learn this. I do not want to listen to what he's selling me. No.
Well, you know, I just zone in and out when I find something interesting.
Yeah.
There was a pigeon.
Hey, when you talk, I listen all the time.
Thanks, mate.
It's all right.
Yeah, you'll learn a lot.
It's like he said, are you 100% there, Steve? No, nowhere near. Nowhere near. I'm doing a small bit there. I did not. Do you ever think I was asking you a serious question whether you'd put 100% of your portfolio after all we talked about? That I honestly think that you just put, yeah. No, yeah, I put everything in that. In a share that. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. What did you ask me the other day, Pete? You asked about three stocks. You said, which is the best one to go for? I'm aware. By the way, yesterday I was in London. I was playing crazy golf in London yesterday, mate. Yeah.
Were you?
Up there on Flip Rock and Pays. Yeah. All right. Did a round of golf. Crazy.
You're playing crazy golf in London?
Yeah, next to Gherkin, mate. You know. Yeah. All right. Yes. You know,
who with?
Do it. It's boys from Vox Markets.
Oh, right.
Lovely.
That's fun.
Yeah. I got really competitive though, and I didn't. First hole, right? So it's four of you get off, set off, and you get served drinks. Is that the same as in Cardiff, Steve? They come and ask you for drink stuff and drinks orders, and it's very nice. A pizza oven in there and all that stuff. But it's an 18-hole crazy golf course, and it's quite nice. Yes, we went. It's called Swingers, the place is. But I thought it was something else. A bit disappointed when I went in there, to be honest. Good golf.
Yeah. You went all the way up to London.
I had my kit on as well. I had my, you know, sort of really, really tight gold alarmy sort of, you know, like 1970s, I was like, I'm really going for it.
Big shades on. Yeah,
big shades. And I walked in there, I was like, what's going on here? Has it been taken over, is it? It's not a golf place. No, it's always been a golf place. Oh, okay. Yeah, anyway, what was I saying? Yeah, so I walked in. They said to me, where was it? They said, oh, it was the Gherkin. It didn't say next to the Gherkin. And the Gherkin is full of very quite posh companies, insurance companies. Right. I walked in there and said, I'm here for swingers. This guy looked at me. Steve, stop doing that with your throat.
Sorry.
That is disgusting.
Have you learned nothing?
No.
No.
He's learned he has to keep hydrated. He's got a stopwatch. An alarm that goes off. Drink. His mother said it to him, drink water now, Steve. otherwise he will die. So yeah, I text him every hour. Drink water now, Steve. Okay, good.
Yeah. Make sure you're breathing.
Anyway, I went in there, I said, I'm here for swingers. And the guy just looked down his nose at me and said, oh, no. That's over there, sir. It's not in the Gherkin. Okay, sorry, mate. Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, you asked about three shares. Which shares do you think we'd get into? You said Harvest Minerals, i3 yep. Energy, or what else was it?
Yeah, United Oil and Gas.
They're all good plays, aren't they? But we'll discuss. I don't know. What I mean.
Well, so I feel like I may have missed the boat on all three. slightly late to the dock.
It's hard to say. See, I mean, do you know what? I mean, you know, if you look at it, I think less risk at the moment is probably. But having said that, it's hard to say. It's probably Harvest Minerals because they've got revenue coming in now. You know, they've started a nice little sales contract. They've got the MAPA, which is the Brazilian sort of. But we're going to be a certificate in there for your fertilizer. Yeah, stamp done. Yep, pass it. So they need all they That's need good. is a stamp for that, and then they
Brazilian away. Fertilizer. Where can we go? Where else can we go? I mean, where can we
Brazilian
go?
Brazilian fertilizer. But the other two are oil, aren't they?
Yes.
I mean, I think, you know, United Oil and Gas is a very good play because they're very quite diversified in their projects from high to low risk, geographically all around the place. And I think they're going to announce more. I3E as well is a proven sort of oil field, and so it's quite low risk as well. But it's hard to say, isn't it? Really, it's I suppose you have to look at your portfolio as a whole and say, yes. Oh, look, that's a hole. Let's jump into it. No, look at your portfolio as a whole and say, do I have exposure to oil? Do I have exposure elsewhere to Brazilian fertilizer? If your portfolio is full of it, if your portfolio is literally full of Brazilian fertilizer companies, then I wouldn't go with Harvest Minerals.
But
if
some
it's not,
weekend, I am very exposed to Brazilian fertilizer. Okay, good.
But I mean, you know, where, and also, there's lots of things to look at, isn't there? But I'd say less risk at the moment now is Harvest Minerals, because they have money coming in. So that'll underpin their valuation there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, okay, good.
But of course, where there's less risk, there's less reward. You know, and I did say I'll finish on this. And this I sort of been thinking about it for a long time, but I sort of managed to put it into a tweet recently. And I'll try and find out where it was. Oh, where is it? It's miles away.
Miles away, back in time.
Yeah. Well, I'm scrolling down now.
Right.
Talk about any plans for the weekend, guys? Apart from watching the rugby and watching England get beaten.
Well, I don't know if that is going to happen.
Didn't you?
I think I'm more interested to watch the England game this weekend, actually.
Yeah.
There we are, to the best nations.
No, I'm more to see England lose, potentially.
Oh, that's very negative. Do you think you'll beat France?
No.
I think we will. I mean, do you know what? I'd love it if we did. Yeah. I would love it.
Yeah,
I would absolutely love it.
Love it. Is that your Kevin Keegan impression?
No, is that what he did? Is that what he said?
Yeah, I would love it if we beat them.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Was that when he got really nasty?
Got very passionate, yeah.
Okay, so we'll finish on this. I mentioned before, but I said, when a small company is a revenue generator, its share price performance is largely tied to the growth in that revenue. And I said, at the moment, a couple of stocks own like Feedback. Trevor Brown is selling Feedback down again. What is he doing? He was buying up last week, now he's selling back down. He was to 11%, now he's at 9%. That's why Feedback is taking a hammering. By the way, they've got no CFP. I think they're building a nice team there. Anyway, so some of my worst performers at the moment are companies that have revenue. And that's because they're missing the revenue mark. When they have that, like I say, if they exceed, they'll jump by 10% a day, the revenue targets. If they do not exceed, or they underperform, they take a hammering. you know? So that's what I'm saying. When a small company is a revenue generator, its share price's performance is largely tied to the growth in that revenue. And that's, you know, that means it's quite limited then, upside and downside. But when a small company is pre-revenue, its share price is tied to potential, hope, and hype. Which is the more powerful force? Revenue or hope, hype, and potential? You know what I'm saying?
No.
Steve?
Dunno.
Steve!
I love Steve.
I love Steve. I do like the coffee. When a company is a revenue generator, its share price is largely tied to the growth in that revenue, right? When a small company is a pre-revenue, its share price performance is tied to potential hope and hype. Which is more powerful, Steve? Revenue growth or potential hope and hype?
Revenue growth.
Oh, good night, everyone. Right, good night. Thank you very much. You get a 50-50 chance, Steve. You picked the wrong one. Hype, hope.
The other one, then.
Potential.
Hype.
You think that's not more powerful? That's if you look at all the companies that we've invested in on AIM, Steve, done really well. Most of them aren't revenue generating. Most of them have got, you know, become baggers, 10 baggers, because of the hope, the hype, the potential they hope to attain, you know? Like Vesarion signing all these deals, you know, with collaboration. No one knows how much they're worth, these deals. They're amazing deals and collaborations and agreements they've done. But the share price has been pushed up by hope, hype, and potential because it's a new sector. No one knows. Everyone thinks that graphene is a game changer in so many industries. So the potential is huge, you know, possibly huge. But when I guarantee when they start to earn money from these some of the collaborations, they won't be huge at the start. It'll come back a bit. The reality will kick in. When revenue gets involved, reality kicks in, you know? And that's what I'm saying. Pre-revenue can fly like crazy because all is based on the share price. It's hype, hope, potential, you know? So that's why it's very powerful. You know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense, Steve?
Yeah, no, you're totally...
All right, you got to go, Steve, haven't you?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
Just going out for drinks.
Okay.
Oh?
Just arranged to go out.
Steve, are you okay, Stephen?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You sound a bit down. You sound a bit depressed. Yeah. You all right?
No, you're fine.
Is it because you put 100% into your portfolio? Into?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Steve, are you all right?
I'm fine.
Okay. He's just a bit down, isn't he, Pete? Do you think?
Yeah, he does. I think he's just because he's frustrated because he hasn't learned anything today.
No, it's been a bit.
He did.
It's been a busy, stressful week in work.
Oh, is it?
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, we should share.
Uh-oh.
That. All right.
A bit too much work on. Not enough time in the week.
Well, yeah. That's not a bad thing, is it? It could be not enough work.
It
could be the other way around. No work on and plenty of time in your hands. Oh, would you like that?
True.
Okay. Right. Right. Lovely. Next, we'll be teaching Steve what is a question. And then when I ask a question, he'll be able to answer it. They go, Steve? What? Yeah. All right, Steve. Have a nice weekend. Are you out with a lady friend?
No, not a lady tonight.
Not tonight. No, it's a man tonight.
Not tonight. Yeah.
I don't care.
A man, tonight, yeah.
Man, lady, I don't care. All right. Yeah. All right, chaps and chapesses. Have a nice weekend.
Yeah. Good luck at the rugby. Yeah.
Yeah. You too, Peter. And
yeah,
I mean that sincerely.
Yeah. Okay.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.